something worse than watching your body betray you? Feeling your bones break as you move? Do you think I can risk the trade the book might choose to make? He was right. You couldn't get something from the Book of Moons without giving something in return. We'd all learned that the hard way. The other Ethan Waite, Genevieve, Macon, and Amma, and Lena, and me. The book made the choice. You could change your mind. People get desperate. I couldn't believe I was lecturing a desperate man about desperation. Xavier turned to face me, his body already partially hidden in shadow. Because I know what it is capable of, what it could do in the hands of men like Angelus. I would never speak a word from that book, and I would be sure it never left this room, so no one else could either. He was telling the truth. Xavier was terrified of magic, light or dark. It had destroyed him in the worst possible way. He didn't want to cast or wield supernatural power. If anything, he wanted to protect himself and others from that kind of power. If there was anywhere the Book of Moons would be safe, it was here. Safer than in the Lunae Libri or some other faraway caster library. Safer than hidden in the depths of Ravenwood or buried in Genevieve's grave. No one would ever find it here. That was when I decided I was going to give it to him. There was only one problem. I had to figure out how to get it away from Abraham Ravenwood first. I looked at Xavier. How many powerful objects would you say you've got in this room, Xavier? It doesn't matter. I told you, they're not to be used. I smiled. What if I were to tell you I could get you the Book of Moons, but I'd need your help. Your help, and the help of a few of your treasures. He made a strange expression, twisting his uneven mouth from one side to the other. I really, really hoped it was a smile. Chapter 18. Shadows. How I get there isn't as important as getting there. I said it for the fifth time.
To this land of the stars and stripes, he asked.
Yeah, well, kinda. The office, anyway, on Maine. He nodded.
Ah, the mainlands. Is that past the swamp of the coolers?
The swamp coolers, yeah, more or less, I sighed. I tried to explain my plan to Xavier. I wasn't sure when he had been in the mortal world last, but whenever it was way before swamp coolers and newspapers. Which was kind of funny, given how much he liked lunchboxes, vinyl records, and sweets. I picked up another ancient book, opening it to a cloud of dust and possibility, and uncertainty. I was frustrated, and sitting on the floor surrounded by caster scrolls in the middle of this strange creature's cave made me feel as if I was back working in the Gatlin County Library on the first day of my summer break. I tried to think. There had to be something we could do. What about traveling? Can waywards use casts that pertain to an incubus? Xavier shook his head.
I don't think so.
I leaned back against a stack of books. I was close to giving up. Once again, if Link was here, he'd lecture me about being the Aquaman of the caster world. A dead Aquaman, I said to myself.
Excuse me?
Nothing, I muttered.
A dead man, he asked.
You don't have to rub it in.
No, that's it. You don't need castes that work for a mortal. You're not a mortal anymore. You need castes that work for a Shear.
He flipped page after page.
An Umbra cast, sending a shadow from one world to the next. That's you, the shadow. It should work.
I thought about it. Could it be that simple? I stared at my hand, at the flesh and bones of it.
It only looks like flesh and bones. You're not really here, not like that. You don't have a body. What was the big difference between a sheer and a shadow? I need to be able to touch something, though. It won't work unless I can get the message to Lena, and I'll need to be able to move some papers around. He cocked his head, twisting his face into a grimace. I hoped it was his thinking face.
Do you need to touch something?
That's what I just said. He shook his head.
No, it's not. You said you need to move something. That's different.
Does it matter?
Entirely. He flipped a few more pages. A Veritas cast should allow the truth to appear, as long as you're looking for the truth.
That'll work. I hoped he was right. Minutes later, any doubts I had about Xavier were gone. I was here. I hadn't flown across the Great River or the Great Barrier or any other supernatural seam. I hadn't turned on the crow vision. I was here, on Main, staring into the office of the Stars and Stripes. At least, my shadow was. I felt like Peter Pan in reverse, like Wendy had unstitched my shadow from me instead of sewing it back to my feet. I moved through the wall and into the darkness of the room, only I was even darker. I had no body, but it didn't matter. I lifted my hand, the shadow of my hand, and thought the words Xavier had taught me. I watched as the words on the page rearranged themselves. I had no time for riddles, no time for games, hidden messages. My words were simple. 5 across. Read in Spanish. Libro. 2 down. Belonging to. OF. 5 across. Lunai. MOONS. I lowered my hand and disappeared. My last message, all I had left to say. Lena had figured out how to send me the River Rock charm, and she would know how to send the book to me. I hoped. If not, maybe Macon would. If Abraham still had it, and Lena could get it away from him. There were only about 1,000 other ifs in between. I tried not to think about them and all the people they involved, or the danger that always surrounded the Book of Moons. I couldn't afford to think like that. I'd come this far, right? She would find it, and I would find her. It was the only order of things I cared about now.
Book 2. Lena. Chapter 19. Mortal Problems. Sometimes Link could be a real idiot.
Libro what? Book of Moons. What does that mean?
Link looked from me to the Stars and Stripes, scratching his head. He would have thought I was bringing up the subject for the first time. 3 words. It's a book, Link. I'm sure you've heard of it. It was the only book that had destroyed our lives, and the lives of all the casters in my family before me on our 16th birthdays.
That's not what I meant.
He looked hurt. I knew what Link meant, but I didn't know why Ethan was asking for the Book of Moons any more than Link did. So I just kept staring at the newspaper in the middle of the kitchen. Amma was behind me, and she didn't say a word. She'd been that way for a while now, since Ethan. The silence was as wrong as everything else. It was strange to not hear her banging around in her kitchen. Even stranger that we were sitting around Ethan's kitchen table trying to figure out the message he'd left in today's crossword puzzle. I wondered if he could see us, or knew we were here. Surrounded by strangers who love me. Unstrangers made strange. By pain. I felt my fingers twitch, looking for the pen that wasn't there. I fought the poetry off. It was a new habit. It hurt too much to write now. 3 days after Ethan left, the word no appeared, inked in black Sharpie on my left hand. Words appeared on my right. I hadn't written a word since, not on paper, not in my notebook, not even on my walls. It seemed like forever since I had. How long had Ethan been gone? Weeks? Months? It was all one long blur, as if time had stopped when he left. Everything had stopped. Link stared up at me from where he was sitting on the kitchen floor. When he unfolded his new quarter incubus body like that, he took up most of the kitchen. There were arms and legs everywhere, like a praying mantis, only with muscles. Liv studied her own copy of the puzzle from the table, clipped and taped into her trusty red notebook, covered in her neatly penciled analysis, while John leaned over her shoulder. The way they moved together, you would think it hurt them not to touch. Unlike casters and mortals. A human and a hybrid incubus. They don't know how good they have it. Nothing catches fire when they kiss. I sighed, resisting the urge to cast a Discordia on them. We were all here. You would have thought nothing had changed. Only one person was missing, which made everything different. I folded up the morning paper, sinking into the chair next to Liv. Book of Moons, that's all it says. I don't know why I keep reading it. If I read this thing any more times, I'm going to burn a hole in it with my eyes. You can do that? Link looked interested. I wriggled my fingers in front of him. Maybe I can burn more than just paper, so don't tempt me. Liv smiled at me sympathetically, as if the situation called for anything like a smile. Well then, I suppose we have to think. There's three rather specific words. So it seems the messages are changing. She sounded precise and logical, like a British version of Marion, as she always did. And? Link sounded irritated, like he always did lately. So what's going on over there? Where Ethan is. Liv didn't say it. Nobody wanted to. Liv pulled the three crossword puzzles out of her notebook. At first, it seems like he just wants you to know he is
alive.
Hate to break it to you, Link said, but John kicked him under the table. Amma dropped a pan behind me, sending it clattering toward where Link sat on the floor.
Ow! You know what I meant.
Around. John corrected him, looking from Amma to me. I nodded, feeling Amma's hand slip down to rest on my shoulders. I touched her hand with mine. Her fingers curled tightly around it. Neither one of us wanted to let go, especially now that it was possible Ethan wasn't gone forever. It had been weeks since Ethan had started sending me messages through the stars and stripes. It didn't matter what they said. They all said the same thing to me. I'm here. I'm still here. You're not alone. I wished there was a way I could say it to him. I squeezed Alma's fingers harder. I tried to talk to her about it right after I found the first message, but she just muttered something about a fair trade and how it was her mess to sort out. How it was what she aimed to do, sooner or later. But she didn't doubt me. Neither did my uncle. Not anymore. In fact, Uncle Macon and Alma were the only ones who really believed me. They understood what I was going through, because they had gone through it themselves. I didn't know if Uncle Macon would ever get over losing Lila. And Alma seemed to be having as hard a time without Ethan as I was. They had seen the proof, too. Uncle Macon was there when I saw Ethan's crossword for the first time, and Alma had all but seen Ethan standing in the kitchen of Waite's Landing. I said it out loud again to everyone for the 10th time. Of course he's around. I told you. He's going somewhere. He's got some kind of plan. He's not just sitting there waiting in a grave full of dirt. He's trying to get back to us. I'm sure of it.
How sure? Link asked. You're not sure, Lena. Nothing sure, except death and taxes. And when they said it, I think they were talking more about staying dead, not coming back again.
I didn't know why Link was having so much trouble believing that Ethan was still there, that he could come home again. Wasn't Link the one who was part incubus? He knew as well as anyone that strange things happened around here all the time. Why was it so hard for him to believe that this particular strange thing could be happening? Maybe losing Ethan was harder on Link than it was for the rest of them. Maybe he couldn't let himself risk losing his best friend all over again, even if it was only the idea of him. No one knew what Link was going through, except me. While Link and Liv returned to arguing about whether or not Ethan was actually gone, I felt myself slipping into the fog of nagging doubts that I worked so hard to push out of my mind. They just kept coming. What if this whole thing really was my imagination, like Reese and Grandma kept saying? What if they were right, and it was just too hard for me to accept my life without him? And it wasn't just them. Uncle Macon wouldn't try anything to bring him back either. And if it was real, if Ethan could hear me, what would I say? Come home. I'm waiting. I love you. Nothing he didn't already know. Why bother? I refused to write, but the words were hard to even think now. Words same as always, same as nothing, when nothing is the same. There was no point in saying it to myself. John kicked Link again, and I tried to focus on the present. The kitchen and the conversation, all the things I could do for Ethan, rather than all the things I felt about him. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that Ethan is around. Liv looked at Link, who kept quiet this time. Like I said, it seems he spent all his energy trying to convince us of that a few weeks ago.
Right around the time you measured the energy spiking at Ravenwood, John reminded her.
Liv nodded, flipping pages in her notebook.
Or maybe Reese was just using the microwave,
Link muttered. Which was the same time Ethan moved the button at his grave, I said obstinately.
Or maybe it was just windy,
Link sighed.
Something was definitely going on.
John moved his foot closer to Link, the threat of another good kick shutting Link up for a while. I thought about slapping a Silentium cast on him, but it didn't seem right. Plus, knowing Link, it would take more than magic to shut him up. Liv went back to examining the papers in front of her. But then, quite soon, his messages began to change. It's like he figured something out, what he needed to do. To come home, I said.
Lena, I know you want to think that's what's happening.
Amma's voice was bleak.
And I felt my boy here, same as you. But we don't know which end is up. There are no easy answers, not when it comes to getting someone in or out of the other world. Believe me, if there was an easy way, I would have already done it.
She sounded so haggard and tired. I knew she had been working on getting Ethan home as hard as I had, and I'd tried everything at first, everything and everyone. The problem was trying to get Lightcasters to talk about raising the dead, and I didn't have quite the access to the Darkcasters that I used to. Uncle Macon had come for me the moment I'd set foot in exile. I suspected he made some kind of deal with the bartender, a shifty-looking blood incubus who looked like he'd do anything if he was thirsty enough. But we don't know that's not it, I said, looking at Liv. True, the logical assumption would be that wherever Ethan was, he would be trying to get back. Liv carefully erased a small mark in the margin. To where you are. She didn't look at me, but I knew what she meant. Liv and Ethan had a history of their own, and even though Liv had found something better for her with John, she was always very careful of how she spoke about Ethan, especially to me. She tapped the pencil. First, the River Rock. Now, the Book of Moons. He must need them for something. John pulled the last puzzle toward him.
If he needs the Book of Moons, it's a good sign. It has to be.
A mighty powerful book, on this side or the other. A book like that would be worth bargaining for.
Amma rubbed my shoulders as she spoke, and I felt a shiver go down my spine. John looked at both of us.
Bargaining for what? Why?
Amma said nothing. I suspected she knew more than she was saying, which was usually the case. Plus, she hadn't even mentioned the Greats in weeks, which was unlike her, especially now that Ethan was in their care, technically speaking. but I had no idea what Amu was up to any more than I knew what Ethan was planning. I finally answered for both of us, because there was only one possible answer. I don't know. It's not like I can ask him.
Why not? Can't you cast something?
John looked frustrated. It doesn't work like that. I wished it did.
Some kind of reveal cast?
There's nothing to cast it on.
His grave?
John looked at Liv, but she shook her head. No one had an answer, because none of us had ever even contemplated anything like this before. A cast on someone who wasn't even on this plane of existence? Short of raising the dead, which Genevieve had done to start this whole mess in the first place, and I had done again, more than 100 years later, what could anyone do? I shook my head. What does it matter? Ethan wants it, and we have to get it to him. That's the important thing. Amma chimed in.
Besides, only one kind of bargain my boy would be making over there. Only one thing he wants bad enough, and that would be to get himself back home again. Sure as the sunrise.
Amma's right. I looked at them. We have to get him the book.
Link sat up. Are you sure, Lena? Are you absolutely death and taxes sure it's Ethan who's even sending us these messages? What if it's Seraphine, or even Colonel Sanders?
He shuddered. I knew who Link meant. Abraham, in his rumpled white suit and his string tie. Satan himself, at least as far as Gatlin County was concerned. That really would be the worst case scenario. It's not Seraphine. I'd know.
Would you really know if it was her?
Link rubbed his hair, which was sticking out in 1,000 different directions.
How?
Through the window, I watched as Mr. Waite's Volvo pulled into the driveway. I knew the conversation was over, even before I felt Amma's hands stiffen on my shoulders. I just would. Wouldn't I? I stared at the stupid crossword puzzle as if it could give me some kind of answer, when all it could tell me was that I knew nothing at all. The front door opened as the back door banged shut. John and Liv must have disappeared out the back. I braced for the inevitable.
Afternoon, kids. You waiting for Ethan to get home?
Mr. Waite looked at Amma hopefully. Link scrambled to his feet, but I looked away. I couldn't bear to answer. More than anything. More than you know.
Yes, sir. Waiting's hardly the word. Bored out of my thick skull without Ethan around.
Link tried to smile, but even he looked like he was about to cry.
Cheer up, Wesley. I miss him as much as you do.
Mr. Waite reached for Link's spiked hair, rubbing it with one hand. Then he opened the pantry and looked inside.
You hear anything from our boy today, Alma?
Afraid not, Mitchell.
Mr. Waite stopped short, frozen in place with a box of cereal in his hand.
I have half a mind to drive down to Savannah myself. It makes no sense keeping a boy out of school this long. Something's not right.
His face clouded over. I focused my eyes on the tall, gaunt figure of Mitchell Waite, just as I had so often since Ethan died. Once he was fixed in my sight, I slowly began reciting the words of the Oblivio cast that Grandma had taught me to repeat every time I saw Ethan's dad. He stared at me, curious. My eyes didn't even flicker. Only my lips began to move, and I whispered the words as they formed in my mind. Oblivio, oblivio, non abest. Oblivion, oblivion, he is not gone. A bubble expanded inside my chest the moment I formed the cast, pushing past me toward Ethan's father, reaching right across the room and wrapping itself around him. The room seemed to stretch and contract, and I thought for a moment the bubble was about to pop. Then I felt the air snap around us. And suddenly it was over, and the air was just air, and everything seemed normal again. As normal as things could be. Mr. Waite's eyes brightened and glazed over. He shrugged, smiling at me, sticking one hand back inside the cereal box.
Ah, well, what are you gonna do? He's a good kid. But if Ethan doesn't get his tail home from Caroline soon, he's going to be mighty behind when he gets back. At this rate, he'll be doing homework all the way through spring break. You tell him that for me, will you?
Yes, sir. I'll tell him. I smiled, wiping at my eye before anything like a tear could fall. I'll tell him the next time I talk to him. That's when Alma almost threw the pan of pork chops down on the burner. Link shook his head. I turned and fled. I tried not to think, but the words followed me, like a curse, like a hex. Oblivion eyes on a cereal box, the warm blinds of a father, lost and last to know, lost and last to love, last boy lost. You can't see, even a bubble, once it's popped. I fought off the words, but you couldn't unpop a bubble. Even I knew that. Chapter 20. A Deal with the Devil.
This is freaking nuts. We don't even have the stupid Book of Moons. You sure the stars and sucks didn't say anything else?
Link was sitting on the floor again, only his feet sticking out from under the table. This time, the one in Macon's study. We'd made no progress, but here we were again. New table, same people, same problems. Only the presence of my Uncle Macon, half hidden in the flickering shadows of the fireplace, changed the conversation. That and the fact that we'd left Alma back at Waite's Landing to keep an eye on Ethan's father.
I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but maybe Link's right. Even if we all agreed, even if we knew we had no choice but to get Ethan the Book of Moons, it still wouldn't matter. We don't know where it is, and we don't know how to get it to him.
Liv said what we all were thinking. I said nothing, twisting my charm necklace between my fingers. It was Macon who finally answered.
Yes, well, these things are difficulties, not impossibilities.
Link sat up.
The whole death thing? Yeah, I'd say that's pretty difficult, sir. I mean, no offense, Mr. Ravenwood. Finding the Book of Moons is not out of the question, Mr. Lincoln. I'm sure I don't need to remind you where we last saw it and who last had it.
Abraham. We all knew who he was talking about, but it was Liv who said it. He had it with him at the 17th moon in the cave, and he used it to bring up the Vexes right before.
The 18th moon,
John said quietly. None of us ever wanted to talk about the night at the water tower. All of which just set Link off more.
Oh, well, that's easy. Find the book. How about we just find our way over to whatever backwoods swamp hole Colonel Sanders has been living in for the last 200 years and ask him real nice if he wouldn't mind handing over his creepy book so our dead friend can use it for who knows what over and who knows where?
I flicked my wrist at Link, annoyed. A spark flew from the fire grating, singeing his leg. He jerked away.
Cut it out!
Uncle Macon's right. It's not impossible, I said. Liv played with the rubber band holding her red notebook closed, an anxious habit that meant she was thinking. And this time, Seraphine's dead. He won't have her backing him up. Uncle Macon shook his head.
He never needed her, I'm afraid. Not really. You can't rely on him being any weaker now than he ever was. Don't underestimate Abraham.
Liv looked somber. What about hunting in his pack? Macon stared into the fire. I watched the flames grow taller, deepening into purple and red and orange. I couldn't tell if my uncle really believed me or not. I didn't know if he thought for a minute there was a way to bring Ethan back. I didn't care what he thought, as long as he was willing to help me. He looked at me as if he knew what I was thinking.
Hunting, though stupid, is a powerful incubus, but Abraham alone is a formidable threat. If fear is going to stop us, we should concede failure right now.
Link huffed from the floor behind him. Macon looked at him over his shoulder.
That is, if you're frightened.
Who said anything about that? Link was indignant. I just like a better set of eyes when I throw myself into a snake pit.
It's me.
John sat up and announced it, as if he'd just figured out the answer to all our problems.
What?
Liv pulled away from him.
I'm the one thing Abraham wants,
and the only thing he can't have.
Don't be stupid, Link groaned. You sound like his girlfriend.
I'm not stupid, I'm right. I thought I was the one who is too, and I thought it was up to me to do what Ethan did. But that wasn't about me. This is.
Shut up, Link snapped.
Macon's face twisted into a frown, his green eyes darkening. I knew that expression too well. Liv nodded.
I agree. Do as your brilliant incubus brother says. Shut up.
John put his arm gently around her, as if he was speaking only to Liv, but I was hanging on his every word, because everything he was saying was starting to make sense.
I can't. Not this time. I'm not going to sit around and let Ethan take all the punches. For once, I'm going to get what's coming to me. Or who.
And that is?
Liv wouldn't look at him.
Abraham. If you tell him you'll make a trade, he'll come for me. He'll swap me for the Book of Moons.
John looked at Macon, who nodded. Link looked skeptical.
How do you know?
John smiled weakly.
He'll come. Trust me.
Macon sighed, finally turning from the fireplace toward us.
John, I appreciate your honor and your courage. You're a fine young man, even if you have your own demons. We all do. But you should take some time to make certain this is a trade you're willing to make. It's a last course of action, nothing more.
I'm willing.
John stood up like he was ready to enlist now.
John!
Liv was furious. Macon waved him into his seat.
Think it over. If Abraham does take you, it's not likely we will be able to bring you home, not anytime soon. As much as I want to bring Ethan back.
Uncle Macon glanced over at me before continuing.
I'm not certain trading one life for another is worth the risk Abraham poses for any of us.
Liv stepped in front of John as if she wanted to protect him from everyone else in the room and everything else in the world.
He doesn't need time to think about it. It's a terrible plan, absolutely horrid, the worst plan we've ever come up with, the worst plan in the history of plans.
Liv was pale and shaking, but when she saw me watching her, she stopped talking. She knew what I was thinking. It didn't involve John jumping off the Somerville water tower. It wasn't the worst plan. I closed my eyes. Falling, not flying. One lost, muddy shoe. Like the lost worlds between me and you.
I'll do it, John said. I don't like it any more than the rest of you, but this is the way it has to be.
It all sounded too familiar. I opened my eyes to see Liv stricken. As the tears began to run down Liv's face, I felt like I was going to throw up.
No.
I heard myself say the word before I realized I was saying it.
My uncle's right. I'm not putting you through that, John, any of you.
I saw the color seep into Liv's cheeks, and she sank into the chair next to him.
It's a last-ditch effort, a last chance.
Unless you've got another one, Lena, I think the land of last chances is right about where we are.
John looked serious. He had made up his mind, and I loved him for it. But I shook my head.
I do. What about Link's idea?
Link's... what?
Liv looked confused.
My what?
Link scratched his head.
We find our way to whatever backwoods swamp hole Abraham has been living in for the last 200 years.
And we ask him real nice to give us the book?
Link looked hopeful. John looked like he thought I was having a stroke.
No.
We steal it. Real nice. Macon looked interested.
That presumes we can even find my grandfather's home. The nasty brand of dark power he wields demands a lifestyle of secrecy, I'm afraid. Tracking Abraham down won't be easy. He keeps to the underground.
I looked steadily back at him. Well, as the smartest person I know once said, these things are difficulties, not impossibilities. My uncle smiled at me. John shook his head.
Don't look at me. I don't know where the guy lives. I was just a kid. I remember rooms without windows.
Perfect, Link snapped. There can't be many of those around.
Liv dropped her hand onto John's shoulder. John shrugged.
Sorry. My childhood is one big dark cloud. I've done my best to block the whole thing out.
My uncle nodded, rising to his feet.
Very well. Then I suggest you start not with the smartest people, but perhaps the oldest people. They might have a clue or two as to where you can find Abraham Ravenwood.
The oldest people? You mean the sisters? Do you think they remember Abraham? My stomach tensed. It wasn't exactly scary, but it was hard to understand half the things they said when they weren't talking crazy.
If they can't, they're likely to invent something equally plausible. They are the closest thing my exponentially great-grandfather has to contemporaries, even if they're hardly what one would call contemporary.
Liv nodded. It's worth a try. I stood up.
Just a conversation, Lena,
Uncle Macon cautioned.
Don't get any ideas. You're not to set out on any kind of reconnaissance mission of your own. Am I perfectly clear?
Crystal, I said, because there was no talking to him about anything that seemed dangerous. He'd been like this since Ethan.
I'll go with you for backup,
Link said, pulling himself up from the floor of the study. Link, who couldn't add two-digit numbers, always sensed when my uncle and I were about to start fighting. He grinned.
I can translate.
By now, I felt like I knew the sisters as well as my own family. Though they were eccentric, to put it mildly, they were also the finest example of living history Gatlin had to offer. That's what the people around here called it. When Link and I walked up the steps of Waits Landing, you could hear Gatlin's living history fighting with each other all the way through the screen door, true to form.
You don't throw away perfectly good cutlery. That's a crying shame. Mercy Lynn, they're plastic spoons. Means you're supposed to throw them away.
Thelma was consoling her, patient as always. She should be sainted. Amma was the first one to say it every time Thelma broke up one of the sisters' arguments.
Just because some people think they're the Queen of England doesn't give them a crown,
Aunt Mercy responded. Link stood next to me on the porch and tried not to laugh. I knocked on the door, but nobody seemed to notice.
Now, what on earth is that supposed to mean?
Aunt Grace interrupted.
Who's some people? Angelina Witherspoon and all them parkly naked stars? Grace Ann, you don't speak like that, not in this house.
It didn't even slow Aunt Grace down.
From those smutty magazines you're always asking Thelma to get from the market?
Now, girls, Thelma started. I knocked again, more loudly this time, but it was impossible to hear over the chaos. Aunt Mercy was shouting,
It means you wash the good spoons same as you wash the bad spoons. Then you put them all back in the spoon drawer. Everyone knows that, even the Queen of England. Don't listen to her, Thelma. She washes the garbage when you and Alma aren't looking.
Aunt Mercy sniffed.
What if I do? You want the neighbors talking? We're respectable church-going people. We don't smell like sinners, and there's no reason for the cans out front to smell any different. Except in that full of garbage, Aunt Grace snorted.
I knocked on the screen door one more time. Link took over, banging once, and the door practically gave out, one hinge swinging down toward the porch.
Whoops, sorry about that.
He shrugged awkwardly. Amma appeared at the door, looking grateful for the distraction.
You ladies have some visitors.
She pushed the screen open wide. The sisters glanced up from their respective afghans, looking friendly and polite, like they hadn't been screaming bloody murder a second earlier. I sat on the edge of a hard wooden chair, not making myself too comfortable. Link stood even less comfortably next to me.
I reckon we do. Afternoon, Wesley. And who's there with y'all?
Aunt Mercy squinted.
and Aunt Grace elbowed her.
It's that girlfriend, Ethan's, that pretty Ravenwood gal. The one who always has her nose in a book, like Lila Jane.
That's right. You know me, Aunt Mercy. I'm Ethan's girlfriend, ma'am. It was the same thing I said every time I came over. Aunt Mercy harumphed.
Well, what if it is? What are you doing around here now that Ethan's gone and passed on to one world or another?
Amma froze in the kitchen doorway.
Come again?
Thelma didn't look up from her needlepoint.
You heard me, Miss Alma,
Aunt Mercy said.
What?
I stammered.
What are you talking about?
Link could barely speak. You know about Ethan?
How?
I leaned forward in my chair.
You think we don't catch a thing or two about what's going on around here? Wasn't born yesterday, and we're smarter than y'all think. We know plenty about the casters, same as we do weather patterns and dress patterns and traffic patterns and...
Aunt Grace wadded up her handkerchief, her voice trailing off.
And the peach stand seasons!
Aunt Mercy looked proud.
A storm cloud's a storm cloud. This one's been working its way through the sky for a long time now. Near about all our lives.
Aunt Grace nodded at her sister.
Seems to me any right-minded person would try to keep out a storm like that.
Amma bristled, tucking the edge of the blanket around Aunt Grace's legs. We didn't know you knew, I said.
Lord have mercy, you're as bad as Prudence Jane. She thought we didn't have a clue between us about her traipsing all over underneath the county and back. Like we didn't know our daddy picked her to keep the map. Like we didn't tell him ourselves to pick Prudence Jane. Always thought she was the one with the steadiest hand out of all three of us.
Aunt Mercy laughed.
Sweet Redeemer, Mercy Lynn, you know our daddy would have picked me afore he picked you. I only told him to ask you on account of I didn't like my hair all curled up, the way it got in the underground. Looked like a porcupine with a bad permanent, I swear.
Aunt Grace shook her head. Mercy sniffed.
You do swear, Grace Ann, and I'm the only one who knows it. You take that back.
Aunt Grace pointed a bony finger at her sister.
I will not.
Please, ma'am. Ma'ams. What was the plural of ma'am? We need your help. We're looking for Abraham Ravenwood. He has something of ours, something important. I looked from one sister to the other.
We need it to...
Link corrected himself.
To bring Ethan home, lickety split.
If you hung around the sisters long enough, you started talking like them. I rolled my eyes.
What are you fussing about?
Aunt Grace waved her handkerchief. Aunt Mercy sniffed again.
Sounds like more caster nonsense to me.
Amma raised an eyebrow.
Why don't you catch us all up, seeing as how we all love nonsense the way we do?
Link and I looked at each other. It was going to be a long night. Caster nonsense or not, once Amma dragged out the sisters' scrapbooks, wheels began turning and mouths started moving. At first, Amma couldn't bear to hear the mention of Abraham Ravenwood's name, but Link kept talking. And talking. And talking. Still, Amma didn't stop him, which seemed like half a victory, though talking to the sisters themselves didn't seem anything like the other half of one. Within the hour, Abraham Ravenwood was denounced as the devil, a cheat, a scoundrel, a no-goodnik, and a thief. He'd kept their daddy's daddy's daddy from the southeast corner of his old apple orchard, which was rightfully his, and his daddy's daddy from a seat on the county board, which also was rightfully his. And on top of all that, they were more than certain that he had danced with the devil up at Ravenwood Plantation on more than one occasion, before it burned during the Civil War. When I attempted to clarify, they didn't want to get more specific than that.
That's what I said. He up and danced with the devil. He made a deal. Don't like talking about or thinking about him neither.
Aunt Mercy shook her head so violently I thought her dentures were going to come unglued.
Let's say you did think about him, though. Where would you picture him?
Link tried again,
just as we had all night. Finally, it was Aunt Grace who found the missing piece to the scrambled crossword puzzle the sisters considered conversation.
Why, at his place, of course. Anybody with a lick of sense knows that.
Where's his place, Aunt Grace, ma'am? I put my hand on Link's arm, hopeful. It was the first clear sentence we'd gotten out of her in what felt like hours.
The dark side of the moon, I reckon, where all the devils and demons live when they're not burning down below.
My heart sank. I was never going to get anywhere with these two.
Great, the dark side of the moon. So Abraham Ravenwood is alive and well in a Pink Floyd album.
Link was getting as crabby as I was.
That's what Grace Ann said, the dark side of the moon.
Aunt Mercy looked annoyed.
Don't know why you two act like that's such a conundrum.
Where exactly is the dark side of the moon, Aunt Mercy?
Alma sat down next to Ethan's great aunt, taking the old woman's hands in her lap.
You know, come on now.
Aunt Mercy smiled at Alma.
Course I do.
She glared at Aunt Grace.
'Cause Daddy picked me for Grace. I know all sorts of things.
Then, where is it? Alma asked. Grace snorted, pulling the photo album off the coffee table in front of them.
Young people, acting like they know everything. Acting like we're one step from the home just 'cause we got a year or two on you.
She leafed through the pages madly, as if she was looking for one thing in particular, which apparently she was. Because there, on the last page, under a faded pressed camellia and a stretch of pale pink ribbon, was the ripped-off top of a book of matches. It was from some kind of bar or club.
I'll be danged,
Link marveled, earning himself a swat on the head from Aunt Mercy. There it was, marked with a silvery moon. The dark side o' the moon, Nolan's finest since 1911. The dark side o' the moon was a place where I might be able to find Abraham Ravenwood and, I hoped, the Book of Moons. If the sisters were not completely out of their minds, which was a possibility that could never be discounted. Alma took one look at the matches and left the room. I remembered the story of Alma's visit to the Beaucourt and knew better than to press her further. Instead, I looked at Aunt Grace. Do you mind? Aunt Grace nodded, and I pulled the antique shred of matchbook from the album page. Most of the paint was scratched off the embossed moon, but you could still see the writing. We were going to New Orleans. You would have thought Link had solved the Rubik's Cube. The moment we got into the beater, he started blasting some song from Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and shouting excitedly over the music. When we slowed at the corner, I turned down the volume and cut him off. Drop me off at Ravenwood, will you? I need to get something before I leave for New Orleans.
Hold on, I'm coming with you. I promised Ethan I'd keep my eye on you, and I keep my promises.
I'm not taking you. I'm taking John.
John? That's something you're getting from home?
His eyes narrowed.
No way.
I wasn't asking your permission, just so you know.
Why? What's he got that I haven't?
Experience. He knows about Abraham, and he's the strongest hybrid incubus in Gatlin County as far as we know.
We're the same, Lena.
Link's feathers were getting ruffled. You're more mortal than John is. That's what I like about you, Link. But it also makes you weaker.
Who are you calling weak?
Link flexed his muscles. To be fair, he did nearly split his t-shirt in half. He was like the Incredible Hulk of Stonewall Jackson High. I'm sorry. You're not weak. You're just 3/4 human, and that's a little too human for this trip.
Whatever. Suit yourself. See if you can even get 10 feet through the tunnels without me. You'll be back here begging for my help before I can say...
His face went blank. A classic Link moment. Sometimes the words just seem to float away from him before they could make it all the way from his brain to his mouth. He finally gave up with a shrug.
Something. Something real dangerous.
I patted his shoulder. by Link. Link frowned, hitting the gas pedal, and we ripped down the street. Not the usual kind of rip for an incubus, but then again, he was 3/4 rocker. Just the way I liked him. My favorite Linkubus. I didn't say that, but I'm pretty sure he knew. I changed every light green for him all the way down Route 9. The beater never had it so good. Chapter 21, Dark Side of the Moon. Saying we were going to New Orleans to find an old bar and an even older incubus was one thing. Actually, finding him was something different. What stood between those two things was talking my Uncle Macon into letting me go. I tried my uncle at the dinner table, well after Kitchen had served up his favorite dinner, before the plates had disappeared from the endlessly long table. Kitchen, who was never as accommodating as you'd think a Castor Kitchen might be, seemed to know it was important and did everything I asked and more. When I walked downstairs, I found flickering candelabras and the scent of jasmine in the air. With a flutter of my fingers, orchids and tiger lilies bloomed across the length of the table. I fluttered them again, and my viola appeared in the corner of the room. I stared at it, and it began to play Paganini, a favorite of my uncle's. Perfect. I looked down at my grubby jeans and Ethan's faded sweatshirt. I closed my eyes as my hair began to weave itself into a thick French braid. When I opened them again, I was dressed for dinner. A simple black cocktail dress, the one Uncle Macon bought me last summer in Rome. I touched my neck, and the silver crescent moon necklace he gave me for the winter formal appeared at the base of my throat. Ready. Uncle M, dinner time? I called out into the hall. But he was already there next to me, appearing as swiftly as if he was still an incubus and could rip through space and time whenever he wanted. Old habits died hard. Beautiful, Lena. I find the shoes an especially nice touch. I looked down and noticed my raggedy black Converse still on my feet. So much for dressing for dinner. I shrugged and followed him to the table. Filet of sea bass with baby fennel. Warm lobster tail, scallops carpaccio, grilled peaches soaked in port. I had no appetite, especially not for food you could only find at a 5-star restaurant on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, where Uncle Macon took me at every opportunity. But he ate happily for the better part of an hour. One thing about former incubuses, they really appreciate mortal food. What is it? My uncle finally said over a forkful of lobster. What's what? I put down my fork. This. He gestured at the spread of silver platters between us, pulling the shiny dome off one overflowing with steaming, spicy oysters. And this. He looked pointedly at my viola, still playing softly. Paganini, of course. Am I really that predictable? I avoided his eyes. It's called dinner. You eat it, which you seem to have no problem doing, by the way. I grabbed a ridiculous flagon of ice water, where Kitchen found some of our tableware I'd never know, before he could say anything else. This is not dinner. This is, as Mark Antony would say, a tantalizing table of treason. Or perhaps treachery. He swallowed another bite of lobster. Or perhaps both, if Mark Antony were a fan of alliteration. No treason, I smiled. He smiled back, waiting. My uncle was many things, a snob for one, but he wasn't a fool. Just a simple request. He set down his wine glass, heavy on the linen tablecloth. I waved a finger. And the glass filled itself. Insurance, I thought. Absolutely not, said Uncle Macon. I haven't asked you anything. Whatever it is, no. The wine proves it. The last straw. The final pheasant feather on the proverbial fluffy feather bed. So you're saying Mark Antony isn't the only fan of alliteration? I asked. Out with it. Now. I pulled the matchbook cover out of my pocket and pushed it across the table so he could see it.
Abraham?
I nodded.
And this is in New Orleans?
I nodded again. He handed me back the matchbook, dabbing at his mouth with his linen napkin.
No.
He returned to the wine. No, you're the one who agreed with me. You were the one who said we could find him ourselves.
I did, and I will find him while you remain locked safely in your room. Like the nice little girl you should be, you're not going to New Orleans alone.
New Orleans is the problem? I was stunned. Not your ancient but deadly incubus ancestor who tried to kill us on more than one occasion?
That and New Orleans. Your grandmother wouldn't hear of it, even if I said yes.
She wouldn't hear of it, or she shouldn't hear of it? He lifted an eyebrow.
I beg your pardon?
What about if she just doesn't hear of it? That way it's not an issue. I put my arms around my uncle. As angry as he made me, and as annoying as it was to have him pay off the underground bartenders and ground me from various dangerous pursuits, I loved him, and I loved that he loved me as much as he did.
How about no?
How about she'll be with Aunt Dell and everyone in Barbados until next week? So why is this even a problem?
How about still no?
At that point, I gave up. It was hard to stay angry at Uncle Macon, impossible even. Knowing how I felt about him was the only way I understood how hard it was for Ethan to live apart from his own mother. Lila Evers Waite. How many times had her path crossed mine? We love what we love and who. We love who we love and why. We love why we love and find a falling shoelace knotted and strung between the fingers of strangers. I didn't want to think about it, but I hoped it was true. I hoped wherever Ethan was, he was with her now. At least give him that.
John and I left first thing in the morning. We needed to leave early, since we were taking the long way, the tunnels, rather than traveling, though if I'd let him, John could have easily gotten us there in the blink of an eye. I didn't care. I wouldn't let him. I didn't want to be reminded of the other times I'd let John carry me all the way to Seraphine. So we did it my way. I cast a resonantia on my viola and set it to practice in the corner while I was gone. It would wear off eventually, but it might give me enough time. I didn't tell my uncle I was going. I just went. Uncle Macon still slept most of the day, old habits being what they were. I figured I had at least 6 good hours before he noticed my absence, by which I mean before he flipped out and came after me. One thing I'd realized in the last year was that there were some things no one could give you permission to do. All the same, it didn't mean you couldn't or shouldn't do them, particularly when it came to the big things, like saving the world, or journeying to a supernatural seam between realities, or bringing your boyfriend back from the dead. Sometimes you had to take matters into your own hands. Parents, or uncles who are the closest thing you have to them, aren't equipped to deal with that, because no self-respecting parent in this world or any other is going to step aside and say, "Sure, risk your life. The world is at stake here." How would they possibly say it? Be back by dinner, hope you don't die? They couldn't do it. You couldn't blame them. But it didn't mean that you shouldn't go. I had to go, no matter what Uncle Macon said. That's what I told myself anyway, as John and I headed into the tunnels far beneath Ravenwood, where, in the darkness, it could have been any time of day or year, any century, anywhere in the world. The tunnels weren't the scary part. Even spending time alone with John, something I hadn't done since he'd tricked me and dragged me into going to the Great Barrier for my 17th moon, wasn't the problem. The truth was, Uncle Macon was right. I was more afraid of the doorwell that stood before me and of what I would find on the other side. The ancient doorwell that brought light flooding down onto the stone steps of the Castor Tunnel where I waited now. the one marked New Orleans, the place where Alma had basically made a pact with the darkest magic in the universe. I shivered. John looked at me, his head tilted.
Why are you stopping here?
No reason.
You scared, Lena?
No. Why would I be scared? It's just a city. I tried to put all thoughts of black magic bakors and voodoo out of my mind. Just because Ethan had followed Alma into bad times there didn't mean I was going to encounter the same darkness. At least, not the same bakor. Did it?
If you think New Orleans is just a city, then you've got another thing coming.
John's voice was low, and I could barely see his face in the darkness of the tunnels. He sounded as spooked as I felt. What are you talking about?
The most powerful caster city in the country, the greatest convergence of dark and light power in modern times, a place where anything can happen at any hour of the day.
At 100-year-old bar for 200-year-old supernaturals? How frightening could it be? At least that's what I tried to tell myself. He shrugged.
Might as well start there, knowing Abraham. It won't be as easy to find him as we think.
We started up the stairs and into the bright sunlight that would take us to the dark side o' the moon. The street, a row of shabby bars sandwiched between more shabby bars, was deserted, which made sense considering it was still so early in the day. It looked like all the other streets we'd seen since the Dorwell brought us up into the infamous French Quarter of New Orleans. The ornately wrought iron railings swept across every balcony and along every building, even curving around the street corners. In the stark morning light, the faded colors of the painted plaster were sun-bleached and peeling. The road was lined with trash, trash piled upon more trash, the only remaining evidence of the night before. I'd hate to see how it looks around here the morning after Mardi Gras, I said, looking for a way to pick through the mountain of garbage standing between me and the sidewalk. Remind me never to go to a bar.
I don't know. We had some good times back at Exile. You and me and Rid. Causing trouble on the dance floor.
John smiled and I blushed, remembering. Arms around me, dancing, hurried. Ethan's face, pale and worried. I shook my head, letting the words fall away. An underground hole for derelict supernaturals isn't what I was talking about.
Aw, come on. We weren't exactly derelicts. Well, you weren't. Rid and me, we probably qualified.
He pushed me toward the doorway playfully. I shoved him back, a little less playfully. Stop it. That was 1 million years ago, maybe 2 million. I don't want to think about it.
Come on, Lena. I'm happy. You're...
I shot him a look and he cut himself off.
You will be happy again, I promise. That's why we're here, isn't it?
I looked at him, standing there next to me in the middle of a run-down side street in the French Quarter, far too early in the morning, helping me look for the not-quite-a-man John hated more than anyone in the universe. He had more of a reason to hate Abraham Ravenwood than I did, and he wasn't saying a word about what I was making him do. Who would have thought John would end up being one of the best guys I'd ever met? And who would have thought John would end up volunteering to risk his life to bring back the love of mine? I smiled at him, though I felt like crying. John?
Yeah?
He wasn't paying attention. He was looking up at the bar signs, probably wondering how he was going to get up the nerve to go inside any of them. They all looked like serial killer hangouts. I'm sorry.
Huh?
Now he was listening. Confused, but listening. About this. That it has to involve you. And if you don't want it to, I mean, if we don't find the book...
We'll find it.
I'm just saying, I won't blame you if you don't want to go through with it. Abraham and everything. I couldn't bear to do it to him. Not him and not Liv. No matter how much had gone down between us. No matter how much she had believed she loved Ethan. Before.
We'll find the book. Come on, quit talking crazy.
John kicked a clearing in the trash heap, and we made our way past the empty beer bottles, past the soggy napkins,
and up to the sidewalk. By the time we made it halfway down the block, we were looking through the open doorways to see if anyone was inside. To my surprise, there were people hiding in the woodwork, literally, slumping inside the darkened doorways, sweeping the trash from deserted, shadowy alleys, even silhouetted on a few of the empty balconies. The French Quarter wasn't that different from the Castor world, I realized, or from Gatlin County. There was a world within a world, all hidden in plain sight. You just had to know where to look. There, I pointed. The dark side o' the moon. A carved wooden sign bearing the words swung back and forth, dangling by two ancient chains. It squeaked as it moved in the wind, even though there was no wind. I squinted in the bright morning light, trying to see into the shadows of the open doorway. This dark side was no different from the other nearly deserted bars in the neighborhood. Even from the street, I could hear voices echoing through the heavy door. "People are in there this early?" John made a face. "Maybe it's not early. Maybe it's late if you're them." I locked eyes with a scowling man who was leaning against the doorframe and trying to light a cigarette. He muttered to himself and looked away. "Yeah, way too late." John shook his head. "You sure this is the right place?" For the fifth time, I handed him the book of matches. He held up the cover, comparing it to the logo on the sign. They were identical. Even the crescent moon carved into the wooden sign was an exact duplicate of the one printed on the matchbook in John's hand. "And I was so hoping the answer would be no." He handed the matchbook back to me. "You wish," I said, kicking a stray piece of wet napkin off my black chucks. He winked at me. "Ladies first." Chapter 22. Bird in a Gilded Cage. It took a while for my eyes to adjust to the dim light, and even longer for the rest of me to adjust to the stench. It smelled like must and rust and old beer. Old everything. Through the shadows, I could see rows of small round tables and a high brass bar, almost as tall as I was. Bottles were stacked on shelves all the way to a high ceiling, so high the long brass chandeliers seemed to dangle down from nowhere. Dust covered every surface and every bottle. It even swirled in the air in the few places where beams of light poked through shuttered windows. John elbowed me. "Isn't there some kind of cast that can keep our noses from working, like a stinkus lessus cast?" "No, but I can think of a few shuttus uppus casts that might be applicable right about now."
"Temper caster girl, you're supposed to be light. You know, one of the good guys."
"I broke the mold, remember, on my 17th moon, when I was claimed light and dark."
I shot him a serious look.
"Don't forget, I've got my dark side."
"I'm scared,"
he grinned. "You should be. Very."
I pointed to a mirrored sign on the paneling, right behind him. A silhouette of a woman was painted next to a row of words.
"Lips that touch liquor shall not touch ours."
I shook my head. Clearly not the slogan of the Jackson Cheer Squad.
"What?" John looked up. "I bet this place used to be a speakeasy, a hidden bar during Prohibition. New Orleans was probably full of them."
I looked around the room.
"That means there has to be another room, right? A room behind this room."
John nodded. "Of course. Abraham would never hang out where anyone could walk into his hideout, no matter where it is. It was the one thing all our homes had in common."
He looked around.
"But I don't remember a place like this."
"Maybe it was before your time, and he came back here because it was somewhere no one currently alive could find him."
"Maybe. Still, something feels off about this place."
Then I heard a familiar voice. No, a familiar laugh, sweet and sinister. There was nothing else like it in the world. "Ridley, is that you?" I kelted, but she didn't answer. Maybe she didn't hear, or it had been too long since we had connected in any kind of meaningful way.
I didn't know, but I had to try. I ran up the wooden staircase at the back of the bar. John was just steps behind me. As soon as I got to the room at the top, I started banging on the wall where I thought her voice had come from, high above stacks of crates and cases of bottles. The storage room wall was hollow, and there was clearly something behind it.
Ridley!
I needed a better look. I pushed a tall stack of crates out of the way. I closed my eyes and let myself rise high into the air until I floated parallel with the window. I opened my eyes, hovering for a second. What I saw was so surprising, it knocked me right to the floor. I could have sworn I saw my cousin and a whole lot of makeup and what looked like a flash of gold. Rid wasn't in danger. She was probably lying around in there, painting her nails, sucking on a lollipop, having the time of her life. Either that, or I was hallucinating. I'm going to kill her. I swear, Rid, if you're really this crazy, if you've really gone this dark, I'm going to jam those lollipops of yours down your throat, one ball of sugar at a time. What? I felt John's arms behind me, pulling me back to the floor. I pointed to the wall. It's my cousin. She's on the other side of this wall. I knocked on the wall above the nearest row of crates. No, 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 no. He started backing away, like even the mention of my cousin had him wanting to make a break for it. I felt myself turning red. She was my cousin, and I wanted to kill her. Still, she was my cousin, and I was the one who wanted to kill her. It was a family matter, not something John needed to worry about. Look, John, I have to get her.
Have you lost your mind?
Probably.
If she's hanging with Abraham, she's not going anywhere. And we don't want him to find us until we figure out how to get the book.
I don't think he's there, I said.
You don't think, or you don't know?
If he was there, wouldn't you sense something? I thought you two were connected somehow. Wasn't that how he brainwashed you or whatever? John looked nervous, and I felt guilty for saying it.
I don't know. It's possible.
He stared up at the high window.
Okay, you get in there and see what Ridley's problem is. I'll keep an eye out for Abraham outside and make sure he doesn't come back while you're inside.
Thanks, John.
But don't be an idiot. If she's gone too dark, she's too dark. You can't change Ridley. That's one thing we've all learned the hard way.
I know. I probably knew it better than anyone, except maybe Link. But deep down, I also knew better than anyone how much my cousin was like everyone else, how badly she wanted to fit in and be loved and have friends and be happy, just like the rest of us. How dark can a person like that really be? Hadn't the new order shown us that the price had been paid? Ethan made sure he paid it, and that things weren't as simple as we all thought they were. Didn't I claim myself for dark and light?
You're sure you'll be all right in there?
Is it really any different for anyone else? Even Ridley? Especially Ridley?
John poked me in the side. Earth to Lena. Just make some kind of noise so I know you heard me before I throw you to that lion in there.
I tried to focus. Go. I'm fine.
5 minutes. That's all you have, he said.
Got it. I'll only need 4. He disappeared and I was alone to deal with my cousin. Dark or light, good or evil, or maybe just somewhere in between. I needed a better look. I grabbed a cask of wine, pulling it over to the space beneath the window that was cut into the wall. I climbed up and the cask wobbled, threatening to topple, but I managed to balance myself. I still couldn't see.
Oh, come on.
I closed my eyes and twisted my hands into the air next to me, pushing myself up toward the ceiling. The light in the room began to flicker.
That's it.
I wasn't much for flying, but this was more like levitating. I rose, wobbling, until my chucks were hovering a few inches above the cask. Just a little farther. I needed one good look to let me know if my cousin was forever lost, if she had joined the darkest incubus alive and would never come home to me again. One last look. I pulled myself up, barely level with the small window. That's when I saw the bars swerving down from the ceiling, all the way around Ridley in every direction. It was some kind of gold prison, a literal gilded cage. I couldn't believe it. Ridley wasn't lounging on a chaise in the lap of luxury in Abraham's place. She was trapped. She turned and her eyes locked. Rid leaped to her feet, rattling the bars in front of her. For a second, she looked kind of like a damaged Tinkerbell with a lot of black mascara running down her face and even more smeared red lipstick. She'd been crying, or worse. Her arms looked bruised, especially around the wrists. They were marked by some kind of ropes or chains. Shackles, maybe. The room around her clearly belonged to Abraham, at least.